The hour of 9 o'clock having come and gone, the State Board of Education will please come to order. Ms. Cordial, would you please call the roll?
Board Member Flores.
Here.
Board Member Goff.
Here.
Board Member Mesnick.
Here.
Board Member Rinken.
Here.
Board Member Shuffle.
Here.
Board Member Schroeder.
Here.
And Chairman Durham.
Here. Quorum is present. I would ask Dr. Shuffle to please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, and liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Dr. Shuffle. Let's see. We'll now proceed to the approval of the agenda. Dr. Schroeder.
I move we approve the agenda as published.
Okay.
Second.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the agenda as published. Is there objection to the adoption of that motion? Yes. Ms. Rinken.
I move to place the following on the agenda. Immediately following the conclusion of our lunch executive session, the consideration of personnel matters.
That's a proper motion. Is there objection to the inclusion of personnel matters essentially at 1 o'clock this afternoon or 1:15? Mm-hmm. There's no objection to that motion.
I second it.
Oh, it's second. I'm sorry. We do have to get this right. So thank you very much. Is there objection to that motion? Ms. Masnick?
I move to place the following on Thursday's agenda, the consideration of an RFP for the state assessment.
Is there objection to the adoption of that motion for placing that on the agenda for Thursday?
I second the motion.
Dr. Flores has seconded the motion. Thank you, Dr. Flores. Is there objection to the adoption of that motion? Those two items have been added to Dr. Schroeder's motion. So to approve the agenda as amended. Is there objection to the approval of the agenda as amended? Seeing none, that motion. Yes.
The consideration of Mancos, is that on the agenda for Thursday?
That will be appropriate to take up when we deal with the consent agenda, which
you.
Is next on the list. So, all right. Is there objection to the approval of the agenda as amended? Seeing none, that motion is adopted by a vote of 7-0. Thank you. We'll now proceed to the consent agenda. Dr. Schroeder, please.
I move to place the following matters on the consent agenda. 16.02, approve the Charter School Institute's request for waivers on behalf of Early College of Arvada as set forth in the published agenda. 16.03, approve the Charter School Institute's request for waivers on behalf of Frontier Charter Academy as set forth on the published agenda. 16.04, approve the 2016-17 expelled and at-risk student services grant recipients and amount of grant awards as set forth in the published agenda. 17.02, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning a license, charge number 2016-EC-556, signify acceptance and approval of the terms and conditions of the settlement agreement by directing the commissioner to sign the original copy of the agreement. 17.03, approve Colorado Mesa University's request for authorization of a combined early childhood education / early childhood special education endorsement program as set forth in the published agenda. 17.04, approve the Colorado Mountain College's request for reauthorization of its combined elementary education and culturally and linguistically diverse education teacher preparation program as set forth in the published agenda. 17.05, approve North Star Academy's request for an individualized principal preparation plan for Kendra Hosfeld as set forth in the published agenda. 17.06, approve four initial emergency authorization requests as set forth in the published agenda. 18.01, appoint Tammy Johnson to the Special Education Fiscal Advisory Committee. 18.02, approve the 2016-17 tuition cost rates for facility schools as set forth in the published agenda. 18.03, approve the 2016-2017 tuition rates for Rocky Mountain Deaf School as set forth in the published agenda. 4.02, deny the Innovation Zone application from Mancos School District titled Application Preferred, as the statute, as the State Board does not have the authority to waive the statutes and rules included in this application. This is the end of the consent agenda.
Yes, Dr. Flores.
I would like to see if there's people here at CBE who could give a little bit more explanation.
Dr. Flores, would you speak in your microphone?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'd like a little bit more explanation on 17.05, which is the Individualized Principal Preparation Program. Just a little bit. They don't.
I think it would be appropriate then, Dr. Flores, if you'd like that removed from the consent agenda, and we'll take it up in the ordinary course of business. And I'm sure at that time staff will be able to provide a short explanation.
Yeah,
so item 1705 will be removed from the consent agenda. Consent agenda does require unanimous consent.
It needs a second also. I don't have a second.
Oh, I'm sorry. Would someone, I apologize. Thank you, Ms. Goff. Seconds the approval of consent agenda. Dr. Flores has removed 17.05. Ms. Rankin, did you want to, or I'm sorry.
Well, I wanted to remove the Mancos consideration.
Item 4.01?
Yes.
It's a request that item 4.01 be removed from the consent agenda. So,
4.01.
Is it 1401?
So it is 4.01. It's 4.01
it's
on Thursday.
It's on Thursday. That's what I thought.
Yeah, okay. So we'll take that up on Thursday.
So it will be considered then in the normal course of business on Thursday.
Correct.
So those two items are have been requested to be removed from the consent agenda. Is there objection to the approval of the consent agenda as modified by the two objections? Seeing no objection, that motion is adopted by a vote of 7-0. Ms. Cordial, your report for the Director of State Board of Relations, please.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Durham, members of the board, and Interim Commissioner Anthes. It's been quite a busy week for us all, but we're at least halfway through. I thought I would share an inspirational quote that I had on my morning tea. And that is, happiness is actually an art of living, which is in us. So, no matter how long and challenging this week may be, we still are able to find happiness within. I'd just like to give my red light reminder. It's the holidays, just trying to soften it up.
Not yet. That's later in the agenda.
I'm a Nasnak.
That's tomorrow afternoon.
I'd like to just give my friendly reminder to speak clearly into your microphones, and if you turn them off, please remember to turn them back on. When speaking, for those of you needing to connect to CDE's guest wireless, locate CDE hotspot, and the password is silver, capital S. In your board packets for Wednesday, December 14th, you have the following materials: the events calendar and quick glance expense report. And also in your board packets or available on board docs are the following materials: item 8.01, the draft 2017 legislative priorities; 11.01, materials pertaining to the notice of appeal for charter school appeal case number 16CS03, Great Work Montessori School versus Jefferson County School District. For item 13.01, you have a memo regarding the School Turnaround Leaders Development Program rulemaking hearing, accompanying PowerPoint, a red line and clean copy of the rules and rules to statute crosswalk. For item 14.01, you have a memo regarding the School Turnaround Leaders Development Program provider approval and accompanying PowerPoint. For item 15.01, you have a memo regarding Colorado's finalists for the National History Teacher of the Year. For item 16.01, you have a memo regarding the rules for the administration, certification, and oversight of Colorado online programs, a red line and clean copy of those rules, and rules to statute crosswalk. For item 16.02, you have a memo regarding the Charter School Institute's request for waiver on behalf of Early College of Arvada and supporting materials pertaining to their request. For item 16.03, you have a memo regarding the Charter School Institute's request for waivers on behalf of Frontier Charter Academy and supporting materials pertaining to their request. For item 16.04, you have a memo regarding the recommended grant awards for the Expelled and At-Risk Student Services EARS program and list of grantee recommendations. For item 17.01, you have a memo regarding the notice of rulemaking for the amended sections of the rules for the administration of the Education Licensing Act, a red line and clean copy of those rules and rules to statute crosswalk. For item 17.03, you have a memo regarding Colorado Mesa University's request for authorization of early childhood education and early childhood special education endorsement programs. For item 17.04, you have a memo regarding Colorado Mountain College's request for reauthorization of its elementary education and culturally and linguistically diverse education endorsement programs. For item 17.05, you have a memo regarding North Star Academy's request for approval of their individualized principal preparation plan for Kendra Hosfield. For item 17.06, you have a memo regarding the four initial emergency authorization requests. For item 18.01, you have a memo regarding the Special Education Fiscal Advisory Committee vacancy recommendation and a letter from the Consortium of Directors of Special Education. For item 18.02, you have a memo regarding the tuition cost rates for facility schools for fiscal year 16-17 and the list of tuition cost rates. For item 18.03, you have a memo regarding the tuition cost rates from Rocky Mountain Deaf School for fiscal year 16-17 and list of tuition cost rates. And for Thursday, December 15th, item 3.01, you have a memo regarding the Every Student Succeeds Act update, accompanying PowerPoint, the state template for consolidated state plan, state assurance template, accountability, state plans, and data reporting, summary of final regulations, and draft state plan, section 3, academic assessments. For items 4.01 and 4.02, you have a memo regarding Manco School District's two Innovation Zone application requests. Their innovation preferred plan, the innovation contingent plan, the projected budget summary and overview, and the signed board resolution. For item 6.01, you have a memo regarding the district performance framework and accreditation rating discussion. And on the bench before you, you have the accompanying PowerPoint, the 2016 district accreditation assignments, and the district performance framework's initial final ratings 2010 through 2016. For item 6.02, you have a memo regarding the innovation accountability pathway overview, accompanying PowerPoint, required components of an innovation plan, and the innovation plan rubric for priority improvement and turnaround schools and districts. And 7.01, you have a resolution recognizing the contribution that Dr. Deborah L. Scheffel has made to the education of children in Colorado. And that concludes my report.
Thank you very much, Ms. Cordial. Any questions for Ms. Cordial? Seeing none, we'll proceed to Commissioner's report. Dr. Anthes.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Yes, we are on hump day of a very busy week. It seems that every December it all coalesces on the same week. Legislative hearings, JBC, state board meetings, accountability ratings, all sorts of things. So I think the entire staff will be sleeping heavily this weekend. So I've been on my tour, as I've mentioned to you all before, visiting all of the districts that are on that fifth year of the accountability clock. And so since I last saw you, I've visited three more districts. I went to Greeley, Montezuma Cortez, and Adams 14, and they were very welcoming, and it was a great visit. Got to visit classrooms, district personnel, and spend a fair amount of time with each of them. So I was very, it was very wonderful to be there. I was impressed with their commitment and, in many cases, progress. I also visited the Harrison School District and saw some great work happening down there as well, and got to spend the day with them seeing some bright spots and promising practices in some of their schools. As you will see tomorrow, we have been spending the majority of our time carefully thinking through the request to reconsider from districts. As you know, the commissioner actually makes the decisions on the district account or the district ratings, and then the state board makes decisions on the school plan types. So you will be seeing tomorrow my final decisions on the request to reconsider process. And school districts, if they don't agree with the decisions I made, can appeal to you for a different decision if they so choose. We had over twice the amount of those this year, so I do just want to give a huge thank you to our staff who have been spending day in, day out, night and day, carefully reviewing those, making sure the decisions and recommendations were consistent across. Yesterday, we presented to the Legislative Interim Committee on ESSA. That was, we were asked to provide a brief update on that work. It was fairly brief from our perspective. I think I was practicing my brief comments, and so I think that went well. Nothing in particular came up there when I was there. I was not there for the whole meeting. I was just there for the first part of the meeting. We also, Board Member Rankin and I, went to our first ever American Indian Tribal consultation in Board Member Rankin's district. We went to Ignacio. This was a formal consultation process that the American Indian tribes hold with state governments around the country. And so we were invited to participate and very honored to do so. It was a relationship building session, and I think it went really well. We learned a lot about the two tribes here in Colorado, and they learned a little bit about CDE's role and the State Board of Education's role. I appreciated going with Board Member Rankin. And we have been busy preparing our responses and our briefings for our Joint Budget Committee hearing that is Friday. With that, I do just want to, I know we'll be talking more about this tomorrow, but I want to give a personal thank you to Dr. Scheffel for her board service and amazing commitment and expertise to the state of Colorado. I know you'll continue to serve, but thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Yes, Dr. Schroeder.
Will we get a notebook for the JBC meeting, or?
Yes, you will.
Yeah, I'm really sorry. I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No.
It seems to me that in the past, I don't want to suggest that I was able to read everything and memorized all the staff answers.
Yes.
But I think we did sit there with a note. Board members sat there with a notebook,
right,
and could kind of follow the responses in order to get a sense for listening then to legislators to see what answers they really wanted as opposed to what was stated.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Schroeder. We are, it seemed to me, maybe I'm wrong, but it seemed to me this was even a more condensed period from when our briefing was to when our hearing was, so we are actually putting together the last responses this morning and making copies of all of those right now.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll make sure you get one.
So if it helps folks at all who are feeling overwhelmed, as am I, this year the CASB conference was a week later. And I think I looked at the calendar for next year, and it is a week earlier. And I think that has helped to make us all feel yet more overwhelmed than we normally do on this particular date in December. So I just wanted you to know that that's one of the things that it turns out really is different.
Any additional questions for Dr. Anthes? Okay. Seeing none. We'll just have a brief discussion of our 2017 legislative priorities. Ms. Mello, if you would join us at the table and let us know what's going on across the street. I'm sure the excitement's overpowering.
Sitting in a JBC hearing room for hours at a time, overpoweringly exciting, then yes. So a couple of things to touch on just in terms of what's been going on. Yes, the JBC hearing was last week. That was on Wednesday, the briefing. The briefing is where the staff member basically presents the results of their work over the previous 6 months and kind of looking at the department, thinking about what issues they believe that the Joint Budget Committee should consider. As is often the case, the Department of Education briefing was a lot of time was spent on school finance. The funding of our schools is a pretty big deal, obviously, in our state, year in and year out. Mr. Harper, who's the JBC analyst, made a rather provocative recommendation in that context to go back to a statewide mill levy. That would require a referred measure to the voters. The legislature could choose to refer that measure to the voters. Whether they will do so or not, I think, remains to be seen. But it was, I thought, one of the more interesting and kind of substantive conversations around school finance and school finance equity issues that we've had in the past. The other issue that came up that there was some time spent on was Mr. Harper expressed some concerns with the way that the department has been treating classified positions when they become open and transferring to at-will. Your staff is all over this and is working hard and has a good response, taking it very seriously. I think happy to have it brought to their attention and ready to respond on Friday. And those responses will be included in the document that Dr. Schroeder just asked to be shared with the board. So that was the JBC briefing. The hearing is this Friday at 9 o'clock. It is currently scheduled for that third floor JBC room. I think it might be moved to the first floor, but at the moment it has not been. So, so it is not in the state capitol.
Not
the state capitol. It's in what they call the Legislative Services Building, right? The building just to the south of it. Yep. Yes.
Old museum building.
Yes, yes.
Excuse me. Would it be okay if we asked Jennifer to sort of summarize what that concern was about the classified employees at will, the issue?
I'm happy to do so. I think what Mr. Harper observes that the department clearly has some statutory authority to manage its personnel practices a little bit different than other departments. He, however, believes that there's a pattern where the department, when classified positions come open, that they are determined not to be classified and filled by at will. He implies, I think fairly strongly, he doesn't think that that is appropriate. Again, I think it's important, and I was really pleased with the fact that the JBC members, I think, said, we need to hear both sides of this. Like, we really want to understand, okay, we hear you, Mr. Harper, and value your opinion, but we really want to know what the department has to think about this and why they've been doing that and what their, what their thoughts are. So
what's the next step?
So the next step is respond in the hearing on Friday. Dr. Anthes and Mr. Chairman did send a brief email to the committee on Friday just saying, we're happy to, I'm paraphrasing, but basically thanks for bringing this to our attention. We take this seriously. We want you to know we take it seriously and we're looking into it. There were three or four specific questions submitted by JBC members on this topic in response to the briefing. The department's responses to that will be included in the materials you will get shortly.
Yes, Dr. Flores.
I need to run over the issue that Mr. Harper wants us to go back to mill levy. Mm-hmm. Can you explain a little bit how it was before and how it will be with mill levy?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Flores, I am not an expert in school finance, so I will do my best, and then if that's not sufficient, perhaps I can, there might be a few people sitting behind me who have a little bit more depth of experience. It may be easier to start with why this is an issue, right? And I think there are two things that are driving this conversation. One is that over time, when you look at the total amount of money we in Colorado spend on K-12 education, the amount coming from the state has gone up and the amount coming from local districts has gone down. So that has implications for the state budget, obviously, right? It's a bigger piece of the state's budget every year. The other concern is that, districts are in different positions when it comes to being able to have the capacity to pass a mill levy, right? So if you're a large district with a lot of people, you can raise real money through a mill levy. If you are a much smaller district with a much smaller tax base, even if you passed one, you can't raise a ton of money. So that's one of the equity issues. And then some voters are more willing than others in local districts to approve mill levy overrides. So what we have is a situation where districts who have resources, at least tax-based resources, and voters who are willing to approve have been able to do that, which provides them more funding. We have other areas of the state that have not been able to do that. And there's a concern about, are we treating the kids in these different areas equitably? mean, I think that's the my level, the 5,000-foot version of it. So what Mr. Harper's proposal does is essentially says we are going to and again, the voters would have to approve this, but every district in this state will have the same number of mill levies, which means
that levy the same number of mills.
Mills, thank you. Property tax is a little complicated. And what that does is ensure that basically the level of effort for every local district is the same. Now, those mills will raise different amounts. That's okay. But everyone is trying at the same level. Does that answer your question? Okay. The other thing, so as Dr. Anthos mentioned, there was another meeting of the interim committee on ESSA yesterday. It was really... They had not met for several months, and I think the totality of the meeting was really just kind of updating them on where things stand. They had a presentation from the National Conference of State Legislatures that was, you know, kind of talking about some of the changes we may see at the federal level, which I can summarize as, we don't know. So, you know, that's what you missed. I mean, the folks from NCSL are great, don't get me wrong, but, you know, the bottom line is, we don't know. Dr. Anthos talked a lot about the hub and spoke and all the work that the department has done, pointing out that Colorado has had a very, very robust stakeholder process. And then the committee talked a little bit with Julie Pellegrin, who was essentially their attorney, about what opportunity. I think they are still trying to wrap their heads around what. I think they understand there's not any necessarily required changes to statute as a result of ESSA. There are things they could change in statute as a result of ESSA. And I think they're trying to get more clarity about what those are and whether or not they want to move forward, because those involve policy decisions. The best example I can give you is the under ESSA, in the accountability system, there has to be another indicator that's related to school quality or student success. So I think that's one of the areas they're thinking about running legislation. If I knew what it was going to look like, I would tell you. I don't. But I wouldn't be surprised to see this particular committee doesn't have authority to introduce bills as a committee. I wouldn't be surprised to see some of the members of the committee introduce legislation to direct what the other indicator should be. Any place?
But there will be recommendations from the spoke. There's a spoke committee on this, mm-hmm. et cetera. So there'll be the information will be coming from two different directions, it mm-hmm. sounds to me like. The legislators may think that they want to choose right. a particular one, and then we have the other process. So it's pretty important that we keep communicating about back and forth about this one.
Absolutely, Dr. Schroeder. I mean, I think we've tried to do that. I think we've tried to keep the members of that committee informed of the work of the department and the hub and the spokes. You know that Representative Patterson and Representative Wilson both serve on that committee, and I think part of that was to hope improve that flow of information. They next meet on January 3rd. Would you like me to talk about legislative priorities document or any other legislation, or just give you a general overview of what I think might be coming at us, Mr. Chair?
Why don't you start with a general overview of what you
sure.
have heard might be introduced.
You know, school finance, always a big conversation, will continue to be a big conversation. As you're aware, the governor's budget does propose an increase for K-12, but not so much that it keeps pace with inflation and enrollment, in the opinion of school districts. So that will be a big conversation. I do think we will see some attempts to roll back or even completely eliminate the educator effectiveness legislation, affectionately known as Senate Bill 191, or not affectionately known. I suppose it depends on your perspective. But I think we could see a bill to completely get rid of it. I think we could see legislation to not completely get rid of it, but to significantly alter that. I believe the charter school equity bill will be back. I don't know that it'll be in the exact same format it was in last year. You may remember that was a pretty significant conversation at the Capitol last year. It wasn't resolved, and so I think we'll continue to have that conversation. I've not heard of anything specific, but I think it is possible that you could see legislation to extend the turnaround clock, right? So it's essentially already at 6 years. I think you could see legislators bringing proposals to...
Wow. I thought it would be the other...
Yeah, I would.
I mean, What I hear is the other, that that's too long for children.
I think that's possible as well.
Okay.
Right. I think, you know, the beauty of democracy, right, is that you have people who represent all different viewpoints. And so there's, I think, two viewpoints on that, and I think we could see legislation from both sides. I am fairly confident we will see some legislation around discipline in early childhood settings. This is kind of pre-K through third grade. There's been a number of concerns raised about that. That could get into a data collection issue because I think many stakeholders, there's a group of parents who feel very strongly that not all children are treated fairly in that process. And they are interested in having better data about that. And so I think they may come forward with legislation to improve, enhance somehow the data collection that the department does in that area. Or they may just simply go the route of, you know, banning certain practices in school districts. I don't think they've landed on their approach yet, but I think we will see something in that area. And then yesterday at the JBC briefing for the higher education department, Amanda Bickle, who is their equivalent of Craig Harper for higher ed, recommended that the Joint Budget Committee carry legislation to basically say that you only get to be in concurrent enrollment if your courses are GT pathways or a CTE course. And the reason she's making this recommendation, and
what's GT?
Well, it's not gifted and talented. I know, that's what's confusing. Guaranteed transfer. What a lovely audience we have. Let me explain a little bit more, and I think I can help clarify this up. What the concern is that students take concurrent enrollment classes, and then they go to college, and they don't actually get credit for them because they don't transfer, right?
At the discretion of the college.
Well, colleges do have discretion over which courses they will accept. I think there is a set of courses, these GT courses, that are all colleges will accept as transfer. And so I think Ms. Bickle's thought is that if the goal of the concurrent enrollment program is to get students some college courses while they are in high school, which is certainly one of the goals, you might want to make sure that those credits are transferable and that you could do that by ensuring that they are a GT pathway. But I don't want to ignore the fact that there are also CTE-related courses, and she's not suggesting that you don't do those. That's just a slightly different mechanism for ensuring that you could still do concurrent enrollment for CTE-type classes that are leading to some sort of certificate. It was a very brief discussion at the JBC. They'd kind of run out of time by the time they got to that yesterday, so I don't have a sense of how interested in that suggestion the legislators are, but she put it on the table. So that's some idea of what we might be looking at.
Dr. Schroeder.
Are we confident that every higher ed institution is going to accept some courses? I would think that given that we have three different tiers of higher ed, that there might be courses that would be acceptable at one level but not at another. I mean, I think some of that conversation may need to clarify whether the coursework, by definition, by CCHE mm-hmm. rules, requires that such and such course be given transfer credit at every
institution. I would agree that I think that clarity around that point is important in the conversation. I think, again, the concept is that there's some previous agreement that probably other people could explain to you better than I could, that that these courses, there's already a body of courses that already have to be accepted by all institutions in the state of Colorado. And they tend to be, you know, it's like English 101, or, I mean, it's not advanced microbiology physics type stuff. It is, you know, more of that core coursework that you think of. And again, I think from Ms. Bickle's perspective, and many would see it similarly, those are the ones that make sense to do in a concurrent enrollment setting, right? It's the initial college classes that you would want high school juniors or seniors taking and getting credit for, and then they can ensure transferability. So.
Now, I might be wrong, but I thought that colleges have a choice whether they accept, for example, AP or IB credit, that they have different...
yes. Oh, good. I agree.
So I can get my feet out of my mouth.
Phone a friend.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. Misty Ruthven, Executive Director of Innovation and Pathways. So the Guarantee Transfer, or GT Pathways is what it's called, is essentially a set of 1,500 college-level courses that are mostly in that gen ed core. And they are guaranteed to transfer for something. They are not always equivalencies, if that makes sense. So this is where it gets a little tricky with the details. So it may be an elective, or it may be another type of, so for example, it's possible that some degrees, and it depends oftentimes on the degree the student is seeking, they might require more than one English course. So it might be a partial English credit that they're applied for their guarantee transfer course. And so that is all outlined by the Colorado Commission on Higher Education and their transfer policies and the institution's individual transfer policies. So they, again, they are guaranteed to transfer for something. And the majority of the time, the credit is not necessarily lost. Now, the AP piece, the advanced placement, is a little bit different in that the Commission on Higher Education last fall passed a policy where for, I believe it's 7 core AP courses, that if a student receives a 3 or higher on the exam, then the Institution of Higher Education must take it for credit for something.
In Colorado.
In Colorado, correct. For the public institutions of higher education.
Yes, Ms. Rankin.
How does this fit into what we voted on, I believe, last year, that the parents had to be told if the coursework the students are taking transfers to whatever college we're talking about? So we had to vote on that. How does that fit into this formula?
Mr. Chair? So thank you, Ms. Rankin. I believe you're referring to House Bill 1144.
Thank
which,
you.
Yep.
Yes, I am.
So the piece of that is school districts and schools, high schools basically must tell parents and students the transferability of courses that are available to them, as well as the different options for earning college-level credit while they're still in high school. And so certainly the Concurrent Enrollment Advisory Board, we've been working with districts on sample messaging, things like that, but it's really between a conversation between the school, the district, and the parent and the student.
So this is all lumped together, everything we're talking about here?
Exactly.
But the parents are very clear on what we're talking about here.
I think that's the attempt of 1144. I'm not sure that if you asked every parent, they would be able to articulate
intent
that.
Or attempt?
Well,
I would also note that that's recently passed legislation, so it may take a little time to work its way through the system.
Yep.
The universities will frustrate the intent given enough time, so you needn't worry. Further questions? Yes.
This draft of legislative priorities, have we gotten to this? And do we have time, or are we going to vote on this someday? Or how does that fit into all this?
I don't, as we've looked at, and I've received individual comments from members of the board in terms of the stated legislative, that two-page document, I think, legislative priorities, I think the general conclusion was that's probably a little out of date, it's a little too generic, and there didn't seem to be any enthusiasm to readopt that and to press forward and circulate that to the members of the General Assembly because of its the generic nature of the document. So I, at least if I have interpreted individual members' comments correctly, is that we should, at least in the short run as we approach this legislative session, focus on specific legislative objectives. For example, we do have the waiver question that I think Dr. Schroeder is going to discuss a little bit, and how do we approach that, and then are there other proactive pieces of legislation that we think should be initiated? It doesn't preclude a member or the staff rewriting that general generic approach, but at least it's my opinion, and we'd be well served by dealing in specifics rather than generalities.
I would concur with that, but if there's any opportunity to sit down with the staff when this is being rewritten, I would be interested in doing that.
So
it probably does need to be redone at some point in time. And
I was under the impression that we were going to meet at the beginning of January to do just that, that we had a meeting set.
Separate meeting?
Is there a legislative committee meeting set? Does,
oh, I thought you had a meeting.
No.
I don't have my calendar with me, but
there, we haven't not set that.
No, yes, Ms. Goff?
Thank you. Typically, this a board discussion about legislative priorities typically begins in October or thereabouts, so that if we're going to develop a document such as the one we have and have time to discuss and finalize and adopt, that's typically done, and I think logically should be before the start of the session. So my understanding of today was that we would be discussing the legislative priorities as they are and injecting conversations about the nature of it, the content, and then we would have, hopefully, we'd have our document ready before the session starts in January. That's typically how we have conducted it. I'm not married to either approach. I do agree that a little focus would be in order, because we do have a pretty good idea about some of the specific areas that we're going to be looking at. We also have somewhat of a luxury in a few hints floating around what the legislature might have an interest in pursuing in relation to ESSA. We have hints. We don't know much for sure, but it could be a guideline in where we want to put some specificity. That's the way we've done it. Normally by December, we're pretty well on our way to having this piece of paper ready to send out, and it's shared with not only legislators, but some of our other partner organizations who also take interest in legislation. So I think that's something we need to decide. As far as rewriting the document, even in a draft form, I would advocate for the fact that we all need to be involved in that conversation. So doing it at a board meeting is probably the best scenario.
I think the problem is it's a long process that on crowded agendas, and you'd probably end up, I think, better served with a group putting a draft together for consideration rather than trying to cobble a draft together. I think the other problem is, while I'm sure we all believe that the legislature is just waiting with bated breath for us to provide them with this information, I suspect Ms. Mello would tell you that they get hundreds of these every year, and the amount of attention paid to any one of them is minimal, and it's just a fact of life in the way that they allocate their time. It's not being critical. It's just one of those realities. And so I think one of the things we should do is maybe at least take 5 minutes to decide if we want to at least try and proceed generically on the waiver question. That's the one issue we've discussed on several occasions. And we want to see if we could come up and perhaps have Ms. Mello get us a sponsor who might draft certain 3 or 4 provisions so we could at least look at a bill and see if we'd be interested in supporting. Dr. Flores?
Well, one of the things that I think, and I don't think anybody would disagree, is that we have a big gap, and it's an equity issue, with kids who are not performing well. And we need to, I think we need to focus on strategies that will try to close that gap. Such things as early childhood education, which has been shown in other states, such as Georgia and Oklahoma, to really have done some good. Other strategies, such as smaller classes for poor kids, minority kids, or these kids in the gap, I think have shown to have some, to be efficacious for kids to do better. So I just can't say enough that we need to look at that gap. We need to be really look at that first, because it is growing. It is not getting smaller. And we need to look at strategies that are going to help this large number of kids, second language learners, minority kids, poor kids, of all colors. And we just need to get serious about doing something about that, because it's just going on and on and on, and that should be a priority, I think, for all of us.
Yes, Ms. Goff?
I don't disagree.
Okay, all right.
Commenting on another one. I appreciated this document that we had in our materials. It was sort of a refresher of the waiver points and a little reminder about some conversation we started last year. I think this would be a great place to start, to have this figured out, especially since we have strong hints that someone will be interested in sponsorship or further refinement with us. And another related point, but I know that one of the advantages, at least on my part, from the legislative priorities is that we've been able to use them throughout the session to sort of monitor and match when we have our discussions about position or not on bills. We have that to guide us. So if it fits into one of our priorities, it sets us up for the conversation. And so any great change would be something I would think about. But I do agree with the waiver part. And as far as waiting with bated breath for how many times have we said we wish they would wait with bated breath before they send all these things over to us? But different story. So whatever the board likes to do with specificity or not, I'm fine with. We just need to get it done.
Dr. Schroeder, do you want to?
Talk fast is what you're saying.
No, we're behind schedule, and that I expect we'd be that way a lot today, so
right.
Not overly concerned.
So I'm just trying to listen to my colleagues. It seems to me there is a belief that this document that we've had year after year can be helpful when we are speaking across the street. But I also completely agree with Steve that for us to work on this together, all seven, as a starting point, is a killer. And I do appreciate the fact that a few people volunteered to start with it. And I would say my recommendation would be to go forth, look at it, work on it, tweak it, bring it back to us, not necessarily at a board meeting, but maybe in advance of a board meeting so that we can provide our input. Steve, I mean, it's up to you, but.
Yeah, I think trying to rework this document would take us the rest of the day, and we obviously do have other issues. I think we do have a question that we could get to resolving, which is, if you want to take a few minutes, do we want to pursue legislation relative to waivers? Is there a consensus to try and do that? Yes, Dr. Forrest?
Why would we want to give authority to a legislature when it falls on our end, and when I think we know more about education and waivers than does the legislature? And I think that districts are different, and even districts within our counties are different. And so I don't agree. I don't think we should do that. I mean, I think we're going at it the right way. We have local control in our state for school districts, and why should we want to give that away? I mean,
Dr. Schroeder.
So the intent in bringing this up is that when we grant a waiver to a school district, they have a replacement plan that we approve, and they go forth
and we never hear from them again. And we don't know whether what they hoped the replacement plan would accomplish did so. So the only intent in this is to have a district come back and explain, this is what we asked for, this is what we are doing. We believe that the work that we are doing and the way we're doing it meets the intent of the legislature. At this point,
meets the intent of what they're trying to do, not the legislature, of what they're trying to do with their kids in that district.
Well, they're not bobbleheads across the street. When they make a law, they have a thought of what they want to accomplish for Colorado's kids and Colorado's teachers.
I'm sure they do. I think they have.
And so I'm only talking about the intent of what they.
But I think that we have been telling districts when they come before us that they have 3 years, 4 years, and then either they come back to us in written form and how. I mean, they're going to be there. We always know. We always have the data on whether they're doing well or not.
May I just correct that? Sometimes we have had districts that we have asked, will you come back and share with us what happens? And then, yes, they will. But there is nothing in the law, unless we address this in some way, that requires any district to come back. My example is that we granted a waiver for a district that was accredited with distinction when it was granted. In any district that's accredited with distinction, it's my personal inclination to say, if you've got a good replacement plan and it makes sense, go forth. But the status of that particular district has dramatically changed. And I just think it's helpful for them to come back and say, whatever change has caused their performance to drop significantly has nothing to do with that waiver or has everything to do with that waiver. That's all. It's just
Could
a review.
We do that in, within our rules and not have to send it across to them? That's
I don't
issue.
Know that. We That's can, a good question. That's a good question about my understanding. My understanding, it's not in our rules. We have asked some districts to do so, but I don't think it's in our rules, and I don't know that we have the authority to put it into our rules without legislation, and that's where this comes from.
Deb? Yes.
So that might be a good question. Can it be put in our rules? Because then we have control over what it says. We have greater control.
Right. Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. To the extent that I've done a little research on this point, and I'm not an attorney, I don't believe that the board would have the statutory authority to do that by rule. Now, you could run legislation. I mean, the legislation could take many forms. One form of it could be to say that the state board shall establish by rule the time frame under which waivers are reviewed. So then you avoid the legislature dictating that time frame. But, you know, my non-lawyer but policy brain that's been involved in a lot of these conversations says you would need some legislative authority to do that.
I think it would exceed our the rulemaking authority is limited to what the legislature grants us, and I don't think they've granted us those kinds of limitations. So I think the waiver, there are really two issues that pop out with waivers, and there may be others, but one is, should there be an expiration of a waiver, whether imposed by rule or by statute? And I think two, perhaps equally important, the innovation waivers are granted with the standard that we have to find that it's likely to result in a decrease in academic performance. I think it would be much better if the legislature would consider changing that to a positive statement that we would need to find there's some potential benefit. Mm-hmm. Because this is no standard at all.
I mean, it's a low bar.
It's virtually no bar at all. And I think when you put these two things together then, where you have no expiration and you have essentially no standard, it is a recipe to simply shirk any responsibility we may or may not have or should have or should not have to deal in these issues. And so if we were to explore legislation, A, does the board wish to do that? B, do you want to have those two issues considered, that is, an expiration, perhaps where we could set it by rule, and then do we wish to change the positive or the negative to a positive finding that there's a positive benefit to students? And I think those are the There are a lot of other issues relative to waivers, but I think if we solve those two problems, would make a significant difference. So,
I see some heads bobbing.
Is there a consensus to ask Ms. Mello to pursue those two items in a piece of legislation relative to waivers, see if we could find a sponsor and kind of a narrowly tailored piece of legislation on those two issues? Ms. Masnick?
Here's one of my concerns, though, is that if we if we say that it's likely to create a benefit, that is fine with me, but if we have them come back for renewal at 3 years or 5 years, then how do we? I would hate for us to be locked into a bar of, well, you haven't improved, or you haven't improved enough, or I'm not sure I want that to be a real hard line. I want there to be maybe some flexibility around that.
Dr. Schroeder and then Dr. Flores.
So one of the pieces of the innovation law, not the waivers, but the innovation law, is that the School of Innovation comes back to its school district.
Right.
To have a review. And they're the ones, and they're, in that situation,
okay.
There is actually
right.
an evaluation, and then it's up to the district. What Steve's talking about is that when we grant the innovation, that there ought to be some expectation that this is good for kids.
Not that it won't hurt.
Then they go back to the district, which is not the way the waivers that we grant work.
Okay.
So that it is a little, I would agree it's a little confusing because they're two pretty distinct processes and expectations.
Well, Dr. Flores?
One of the things we look at is instruments. We look at instruments, whether the instruments that are being used by the state to measure kids who are in early childhood, are they better than what the district has? Now, are you going to show that one instrument is better? Maybe the instrument they have is better for the limited number of kids, and what we have is for a system. We have evaluations and we have instruments really that are made for large, huge systems like a DPS, but not for a small little district that has 16 kids. And their instruments and their assessments, I think many times, from what I see, is better than what the state proposes.
Sure, so, we grant the waivers.
And we grant the waivers. That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
And so we can just change it. Why go to the legislature on this when we can change a rule?
But
we just heard,
Val, that we can't. Legally, we are very limited in the rules that we can set. I believe that's really all we're asking for here, is the opportunity to set some rules, some guardrails around waivers to ensure that kids continue to thrive. Not to make dramatic changes, but somebody else can correct me.
More rules. And
any further discussion on
this? Mr. Chair, I just would note that, I mean, if you all decide that you want me to proceed, there will be additional discussion by you all. It's not as if I'm just going to go off and do what I want, not come back and talk to you about it. So, obviously that's your decision, but I think there'll be more opportunities to talk about the specifics of what it looks like and make sure that all the points that you're raising are being addressed.
All right, is there, on these two limited points on this one issue, is there general consensus to ask Jennifer to try and find a sponsor and say limited around these two very narrow issues? And there'll be a chance, obviously, if that's correct, too. The board meets on a regular basis to review the product and see if we're happy with it.
And somebody who believes in small data.
Yeah. Okay.
Duly noted. I will also make sure to look for bipartisan support, because I would imagine that would be important to you.
Yeah.
That would matter.
Ms. Goff?
Just a possibility that the legislators that were in discussion with us last year would be this is not the same, but interested in talking on this topic as well.
Mr. Chair, Board Member Goff, you know, last year you all had asked me to explore this very briefly. We didn't reach the point of introducing legislation. And my what I did is I went to the chair of the House Committee and the chair of the Senate Committee, who by definition in that scenario and in the current scenario are bipartisan. My general thought would be to start there again, although I'm happy to, if you have other preferences, I'm happy to hear them.
Okay. All right, further discussion. All right, I think there is a consensus to at least proceed on those very narrow bases. So, all right. We are now, I think, ready for item 9, which is an executive session. Ms. Gorgel?
Or do you want to take a an executive session has been noticed for today's State Board meeting in conformance with 24-6-402-3A CRS, to receive legal advice on specific legal questions pursuant to 24-6-402-3A Roman numeral 2 CRS in matters required to be kept confidential by federal law or rules or state statutes pursuant to 24-6-402-3A Roman numeral 3 CRS.
Okay. Is there a motion for an executive session? It has been moved. Is there a second? Second?
Second.
Ms. Goff. It's been moved and seconded that the board recuse itself into executive session. Is there any objection to that motion? Requires 3/5 vote. Yes. We're going to public comment will be next when we come out of executive session. We're a little behind schedule. Yeah, we're a little behind schedule, but we will get it done. Okay, which means we'll probably be a little behind schedule for the hearing actually. So just. Yeah, and why don't we take a couple of minutes while we clear the room and get set up for the.